Question. How does Jeff Lynn answer the telephone? ELO? All right, it's corny, but I just couldn't resist. That is the Electric Light Orchestra, and Rock and Roll is King, a wonderful band that hails from Birmingham, England. Richard Serrett is sitting in for George Norrie on Coast, coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio, AM 640, and I'll be back in this chair doing it all over again tonight, Saturday night, into Sunday morning. Joseph Farrell will be my guest as we discuss the Nazi International, and there'll be some wonderful paranormal talk as well. You are special. You're a coast-to-coast listener, and that means you're passionate, and you have a very, very special way of looking at the way at the world around you. And maybe you're sitting there tonight listening to this program, listening to the sound of my voice, wondering, is there someone out there for me? And the answer is clearly yes. They are legion. They're sitting around listening to this program, asking themselves the same question. And now there's a very unique way for you to meet. It's called ParanormalDate.com. Thanks to George Norrie. Check it out. It's free to join. And then if you use the code AUGUST, it'll allow you to sort of access special areas of the website, ParanormalDate.com. Rumor has it that George is working on an app. It'll make it even easier for you to meet that someone special. Remember, ParanormalDate.com. You are not alone. Open lines when Coast to Coast continues after this. Don't go away. This is going to be fun. I don't know about you, but this is my favorite part of the week. Open lines for the next 2 hours. Let's go to the wild card line. Charles is in the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. Charles, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, and thank you. I was originally going to comment on you guys mentioned, or someone, one of you did, mentioned the Pentagon. Well, there was no plane that hit the Pentagon. I saw the original film footage a couple days after it happened. There was no wreckage. There was no stuff on the ground. There was a 16-foot diameter hole in the side of one little area in the Pentagon, which they had made, obviously. But all the stuff on the stationery and all that stuff on the desk behind that inside was all still intact. But
I remember it was a tiny hole, and in fact, before it sort of collapsed and became a larger hole, I remember seeing images, and there were windows on either side of the entry point still intact.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how does that happen? How does that happen?
Well, the wingspan on one of those planes is about 125 feet. The tailspin alone is 44 feet high. And then you had, a few months ago, you had Judy Wood, who was a scientist, and explained the fact that we have obviously a new weapon of some sort and brought those buildings, all those buildings down and turned them into powder instead of just having damage a few, you know, three, four, five areas there on the top. They brought the whole, all those buildings down and turned them into powder. And then you had Rebecca Roth on, who was a flight attendant for years, and she told the whole story because she investigated it thoroughly. And all those four planes, she said, it's methodicalillusion.com if anybody wants to check it out. And she said that all four of those planes landed about 20 minutes from Boston at a government base. They were brought inside, and all those people were gassed that were in those planes.
You know, I don't know. Quite frankly, Charles, interesting theories. The thing is, I find, and I was discussing earlier with Donald Jeffries, how there's so much infighting. For example, I know that if there was a time, if you were to come out and say, you know, it wasn't thermite that brought down the Twin Towers, it wasn't controlled demolition, I mean, that could get you taken off a lot of Christmas card lists inside the 9/11 truther community, even if you believed that it was an inside job. I think we tend to get so hung up on the how rather than the who and the why.
Yeah, well, the spiritual changes will be starting pretty soon, so all this is going to change. You'll be seeing our brothers and sisters up there. There's a trillion ships flying overhead all the time. A trillion. They're from Uranus, from Orion, from the Pleiades, from Sirius B, from Lyra, from Arcturus, from Andromeda, from Agartha. I have a friend that's been to most of those planets because he lived on Sirius B in another lifetime going way back. And that's also the planet that Jesus of Nazareth was from. Beautiful place.
All right, Charles. I appreciate that. Thank you. Fascinating. Fascinating. All right. Frank is in Houston, Texas on the Wild Card Line. Frank, welcome to Coast.
Hello. Just a moment. Let me get off the speakerphone. Oh, goodness. Mr. Sarek, just a second.
All right. You're off Hello? The speakerphone? Okay. I thought you meant wait a minute till I get off the floor after you heard Charles call, but you wanted to get off the speakerphone.
Yeah,
okay.
No kidding. He's in outer space for sure. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, sir.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Mr. Jeffries, he brought up, some interesting topics. One thing he mentioned, and he mentioned the profiles in Courage. He didn't talk about it, but he mentioned that. And that was the book that JFK wrote.
Correct.
All which right. was required reading in junior college back in the day.
Yes, I'm trying to think of, a lot of presidents wrote books after they left the office. Jimmy Carter has written a pile of books after he left office, but JFK wrote books before he was president. And he didn't have a ghostwriter. He was an accomplished, literate man, John F. Kennedy.
Well, you would think so by the way he spoke in his speeches to the American public. But one of the things that was burned into my mind when I read Profiles in Courage, after you get through some of the what you would accept as, the president trying to encourage all positive things and everything. One of the things that burned in my mind was he said that the elected officials, when they're in office, they see the big picture. Whereas the constituents under them, they don't always see the big picture. So they have to choose things above and beyond what they understand, what they think the general public understands. And I think most politicians eventually follow that route. And I thought that was an interesting thing that Kennedy said. And I always thought of politicians doing just that. They think ahead of us and they think above us and beyond us. And that's why you see laws to me that are passed that will say, why did they pass that law? And it's because they're thinking ahead or they see the big picture. And I don't know if that always holds true in every case, but that's the basis that they operate on.
I suppose there's a certain amount of truth to that, but then if you take it to its sort of its logical conclusion, or if you extend that, now what we have are leaders who are in total disconnect mode from their constituents, and they simply won't listen. They won't listen to the constituents, and they say, "Well, we know better," and where is the we the people in that?
I agree with that. In some cases, that is very well true, unfortunately. But and he also said that he didn't see any war that could help us financially that's looming right in front of us, like World War II, and how that helped the country move forward in its own way. And you don't want to see any kind of war to do that. But that's what happens. People get jobs and we feed the war machine. However, I disagree with them on that, and that I think World War III is looming ahead of us. And it's so obvious that you can't see the forest for the trees. But you can see over the years the missiles paraded in Moscow and China and various places. Pulling those missiles through the main streets and letting everybody gawk at all their weaponry. This is going to end to a logical conclusion, and we're heading in that direction. And someday those missiles won't be sitting on those little trucks and trailers. They're going to be in the air. I believe that very much.
Well, Frank in Houston, I appreciate the call. You know, some might even suggest, and I have heard it uttered in some quarters, that we are already in the midst of World War III. But this isn't conventional warfare. We don't fight with nukes necessarily anymore. Now one country essentially attacks another country's stock market. We have currency wars. We have trade wars. There are things going on behind the scenes, covert operations, assassinations. Maybe this is the new phase of warfare. Maybe we already are in the midst of World War III, except nobody bothered to announce it or declare it. Let's go to the international line. Rob is in Vancouver, B.C. Rob, good morning. Welcome to Coast. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing tonight?
I am very well. Very well.
I'll say a quick comment and ask you, I guess, kind of your own opinion. Given the volatility in the market this week, I kind of want to question the notion of China's influence in financial. And this maybe comes, as pertains to your comments in terms of waging war on a financial aspect. I've never been a believer or supporter of the numbers, financial declarations coming out of China. And right now, we're seeing that the markets are, commenting and moving on a negative aspect because of concerns out of China. I think the numbers and in history or in the past, you got to question the validity of them. And I have to wonder at sometimes, is China really its own, entity in terms of its own financial objectives? Or is it perhaps part of a larger conspiracy, with the notion everyone's out there concerned about a financial collapse? And if it is maybe just a participant in helping, this come about. To digress for a quick second, living in Vancouver, we have a huge influx of Chinese nationals coming here, and we see some very peculiar things going on. In particular, one of the things, if you don't mind me saying, our mayor went on a tour of China and came back dating one of their most popular pop singers and divorced his wife. Sorry?
Interesting. Oh, I'm listening. This is fascinating.
He divorced his wife of, I guess, 30 years. It's almost like a bad plot of a 1950s movie. And then another thing which is completely bizarre is one of the cities in Greater Vancouver is putting up a monument to Dr. Sun Yat-sen, who is, a leader, one of the originals in the revolution. I mean, to consider that this is actually happening, where you have a communist hero and a monument's being built here in Canada, celebrating this individual, it makes no sense. So at least on the financial side, the question is, are they participants, in what's happening in terms of the financial collapse, are they their own lone wolf? My feeling is that they are part of facilitating this.
Well, I don't know. My feeling is this. I don't think there are any free markets anymore. All the markets, whether it's the precious metal market, whether it's the stock market, they are all being manipulated by the Fed, by central banks everywhere. There is no free market, and so if you get into the stock market or any of these markets, it's Las Vegas, really. It's a roulette wheel. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. There doesn't seem to be any value in the stock market.
Yeah, I follow the markets closely, and it seems to have been years and years of lies, complete lies of financial numbers out of China. And then they'll put out a number, and then 3 months later, it'll get revised, and it'll be understood that it's an absolute lie.
No doubt. I mean, you know, the People's Republic of China, not well known for full disclosure, whether it's the amount of their gold that they hold or any of their economic data. But I don't think that they're really any different than any other country right now in terms of Donald Jeffries on earlier talking about real economic data, and I believe John Williams from Shadow Facts. I follow John Williams, and I certainly I don't believe for a moment that the unemployment rate in the United States is somewhere around 5%. I think it's five times that. When you look at the participation, the employment participation rate, underemployment, people who have simply given up and are no longer looking for work, I think the unemployment rate is probably close to 20-25%. This is just a huge fabrication. I don't think we ever recovered from 2008.
I agree.
And I think we're heading right back into the maw of another worldwide recession depression. And we've just papered it over up until now, but we can't continue to paper it over for much longer. I appreciate the call in Vancouver, Rob. Let's go west of the Rockies. And Douglas is in Seattle, Washington. Douglas, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Ah, hello, Richard.
Greetings, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, how's it going, eh?
You know, we don't say that very often up here. We don't say eh. However.
Anyway, George had a guest on, I think it was last Thursday, a couple guests actually, and they were talking about synchronicities.
One of my favorite topics, yes.
Yeah, and a subtopic they did was musical synchronicities, and I tried to get through that night, but I couldn't. And but very, it's quite synchronistic that I got through to you tonight, because I have two musical synchronicities that happened to myself and my brother. And they both involve the band Rush, and obviously they're from Toronto, and you're in Toronto, so it's great that I got through tonight.
Yes, well, lay it on me. I love musical synchronicities. What happened?
And before that, I'd like to thank you for taking my call, and I thank the screener for, but now thank God, because I got dropped four times for some reason.
Well, I appreciate your perseverance. You're here, you're now, so you're on, so let's get it said, my friend.
Yeah, so anyway. So the one that happened to me was I was a passenger in a car with two of my high school buddies. This was when we were in college. It was a couple years after we graduated. We were just driving down the road, and my friend's car. He had on a hard rock station, which I didn't listen to much. But anyway, one song was coming to an end, and just talking out of my head, the song was coming to an end. I said, "Oh, how about next if they play Passage to Bangkok?" Which, I mean, that's not one of Rush's.
No, it's pretty obscure.
Yes, and yeah. Hands on the Bible, swear by it. 2-3 seconds later, I just went stiff as a board and was tingling all over my body. One of my friends said, "Dude, what did you just do, Dougie? What happened, Mike?" So it was just like, "Whoa!"
It's remarkable when it happens, isn't it, Douglas? And you know what? It's not uncommon. I think there are many, many people out there listening. That's happened. Maybe we can pursue that. When we continue here on Coast to Coast. Douglas, thanks for the call. Let's talk musical synchronicities. We'll open up the phone lines on that note as well. Here's Ophelia by the band taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. So wonderful to be with you tonight. Thank you for hanging out with me. You're great company. Little Girl Blue. This, to me, is what made The Pearl, Janis Joplin, so special. She could take a song like this, which is really from the Great American Songbook. This was not a sort of a contemporary song. This was actually written by Richard Rodgers and Lorenz Hart back in 1935. It's a jazz standard, and it was also recorded by such jazz artists as Louis Armstrong, Chet Baker, Rosemary Clooney, Doris Day, Ella Fitzgerald, Judy Garland, on and on. But Janis Joplin made it her own, Little Girl Blue. A caller earlier in the program, or just actually before the break, mentioned musical synchronicities. And to me, that's a wonderful subject. It really combines two of my favorite subjects, music and synchronicity, coincidences. Maybe that's something we can explore further when Open Lines here on Coast to Coast continues. Hang out a while, will you? My name is Richard Serrett. Let's go right back to the phones. And the wild card line, Les, is in Wahoo, Nebraska. Les, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Well, Sabbath peace, and thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I would like to make a statement about the Kennedy assassination, but in listening while I've been on hold waiting, I've kind of been inspired because you were talking about synchronicity a little while ago. Now, I'm probably the last person that has listened to the Republican presidential debate because I just finished listening to it because I've been waiting for a close friend of mine who doesn't have time to come over and watch it with me. Well, as soon as we watched it and she left, I walked in the house. Normally I'd have Coast to Coast on as soon as it starts at midnight. Well, I had to wait till she was gone. I turned it on, and the first thing that was being talked about was the subject of, for crying out loud, what did I just tell you, Ryan?
Well, we were talking about Donald Trump earlier. Quite a bit. Is that what you mean?
The debate itself. I just finished watching the debate for the first time, and
right.
When I turned the radio on, whoever was on the radio at the time was talking about the debate. And how many people at this point in time have not heard the debate yet till tonight?
That's true. So you're coming to the dance a little bit late, but you know what? Hey, let's be fair. Everybody is talking about Donald Trump. So, you know, that's not surprising, but the fact that you just finished watching the debate on YouTube, I presume, and then you happened to turn on Coast and there we were talking about it, you know, like a week and a half after the fact. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I had it on my DVR, and I was waiting for my friend to finally come over so we can watch it together. So as soon as she left, then I turned on the radio, and boom, that was the first thing that was on the radio on Coast to Coast. And I thought, wow, that's really weird. And then they got into the talk about the Kennedy assassination. Well, that's why I called in originally, is about the Kennedy assassination. And with all the studies I've done, I've been to Dallas several times. I walked around Daley Plaza in the middle of the night one time when I was there waiting for a bus for 3 or 4 hours. I had a layover, so it was like 3 in the morning. I'm walking around, I checked the whole thing out, and I've been studying this stuff for years. And the, Dallas. I'm getting overwhelmed here with all these synchronicity things because that subject came up later. Because all this stuff to me, it's all winding together. But anyway, Kennedy, I've seen the Zapruder film. Is that what it's called?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. I've had the opportunity a couple times of seeing the whole film from the beginning, and the muzzle flash that the one guy was poo-pooing that was on the radio. Well, it wasn't the driver of the car. It was the agent that was sitting shotgun, who was a CIA operative. He's the one that did the second shot that caused Kennedy's head to go backward and the back of the scalp blew off. He was shot from inside the car, but it wasn't the driver. It was the guy, the guard sitting shotgun. So that's why I originally called. But I'm more blown away with all the synchronicity stuff because I'm sitting here on the air or waiting to get on, and all these things are coming up. It's like, wow, my mind's getting blown.
Well, you know, if you actually start to pay attention, and you do, obviously, these sorts of things are all around us all the time, these synchronicities.
Yeah.
All we have to do is pay attention, but we don't, right? We're so busy. We've got monkey mind. We've got collective monkey mind. But I can't it's interesting that the topic came up because I would say within the last month and a half, similar things have happened to me. I'm humming a tune in my head. You get that earworm, you know? Is that what they call it, earworm? You've got a song on the brain. Yeah. You can't get rid of it. And I know, you know, I come into the kitchen, and my mother-in-law has it tuned to, you know, an AM oldie station, and there is that song. Maybe it's, you know, it's The Zombies, A Rose for Emily from Odyssey and Oracle. And that's the song that was in my brain, and it's playing. And how often do you hear A Rose for Emily, a sort of a deep cut from that classic album? And there it was. I mean, that happens a lot, doesn't it?
Absolutely mind-blowing.
All right, Les, great to hear from you. Thanks for checking in from Wahoo, Nebraska. Let's move along now because time is tight, as always. Mark is in Fresno, California. Mark, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hello. I'd like to start off by just reading a little excerpt from the Corpus Juris Secundum, also known as the Body of Law or the Legal Encyclopedia. This is from Volume 7, Section 4, as quoted. Attorney and client. An attorney's first duty is to the courts first, and to the public second, and not to the client third. And wherever the duties to an attorney's client conflict with those interests that he or she owes his allegiance to as an officer of the court in the administration of justice, the former must yield to the latter. The biggest problem today is that people do not know their own rights and blindly entrust their rights to someone else. And that's just,
I think you're spot on, Mark. I think that's an excellent observation.
That just goes to what I'm trying to say, is that all these politicians, these public officials, they're not even from our country. They've relinquished their citizenship, and they're all foreign entities amongst each other, amongst us, and they actually have no right to even bring any kind of prosecution, any kind of disclaimer, any kind of anything against us. We are sovereign. We are foreign to them. They are not from our country. And there's a set of there's a history that goes to back this up. Since December 26, 1933, 49th Statute 3097 Treaty Series 881, you know, it's called Conventions and Rights of Duties of the States, you know, they actually went and replaced all the state statutes. This was in 1933. They replaced all state statutes with international law. So they took away all our rights right there. Then they went.
All right. A little light nighttime reading from Mark in Fresno. Thank you for that. You know, here, let me bring it down to just more of a basic level. And that is, to me, there is an apparent problem with our whole system, in that we have legislators who are predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly lawyers, and they are passing laws. Now, isn't there an inherent conflict of interest there when you have legislators who are lawyers passing laws and regulations that they will in some way sort of benefit from when they're no longer sitting in office? I don't know. I just, to me, that's a conflict of interest on a very basic level. There seems to be a problem there, as far as I'm concerned. Let's go to the wild card line. Daniel is in Des Moines, Iowa. Daniel, good morning. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
I'm doing great. Real pleasure to be here. Just real quick, like to wish a happy birthday to my pal Brendan. Anyway, I'm a vice president here of the Des Moines Area Cryptid Collective. We search around, use local lore and stuff, look for cryptids here in the Des Moines area. Now, we were out at Taylorville Lake, local lake around here, doing some surveying a couple weeks ago. And now there's a Indian tribe local here called the Sasquatchini. One of their basic beliefs and one of their gods was a forest spirit. He used to wander the forest around here. It could transdimensionate. That is like transport place to place. It didn't have to walk. It could go all over the place. We refer to this as a transmissional Bigfoot.
Right.
And that's
right.
Not something you're going to hear from mainstream Bigfoot researchers. But anyway, so we're surveying here a few weeks ago, and we're in our tent at night. We're going to sleep, and all of a sudden, we're woken by a bright kind of light blue flash off in the distance. Now, me and my partner get out of our tent. We're looking off. We look around. We don't see anything at first, but we see a flash again. We look over in the direction where it's coming at. About 50 yards away, we see an 8-foot-tall figure off in the distance, real big, probably like 350, 400 pounds, just standing there. Now, we stand off there and have a little standoff stare-off with it for a little bit. It's just looking at us. We can't really make out any facial features or anything, but we both see it. We look at each other. We both look at it and see it. Now, after about probably, I'd say, 2-3 minutes of just standing there staring at it, it starts walking back off, and we just see a flash, and it's gone. Now, we think we encountered one of these transdimensional Bigfoots, and we don't know, are these local here to the area, can they transdimensionate all over the U.S.? We don't know, but we think we have encountered one of these.
Well, I remember having a conversation with Linda Godfrey, who is a Bigfoot researcher, field researcher. And I remember her discussing tracking a Bigfoot once, tracking footprints in the snow. And this was in Wisconsin. And she followed these footprints into the woods, and then they just stopped. And then there were no other tracks going anywhere else. The tracks just stopped. Fresh footprints leading into the middle of the woods, and there they stopped. And I don't know. I think once you rule out all other possibilities and you're left with the seemingly improbable, impossible, that being that Bigfoot, Sasquatch, is some sort of interdimensional creature, you know, in the absence of any other tangible evidence, you know, habeas corpus, where is a body? Where is the roadkill? Why not? Why could it not be some sort of interdimensional being? It makes as much sense as anything else I've heard. Thanks for the call, Daniel. Appreciate it. Sorry to cut you short. I just got so many people waiting, and time is tight. I want to get to Pat in Minneapolis, east of the Rockies. Pat, good morning and welcome to Coast. Is Pat there? Did we lose Pat in Minneapolis? Pat going once? Pat going twice. Is that you, Pat?
Yes. Hello there.
Hi. I didn't want to abandon ship because you've been so patient. Welcome to Coast. You're on.
I think you put your finger on a kind of a metaphor that I have. You said get in line for the JFK assassination suspects. I say it's like a mystery book where there are many suspects because so many people have a motive. And I think that over time, as the puzzle pieces have fallen in place for me, I think more and more the suspect that stands out for me is J. Edgar Hoover, as the prime mover, if you will, who probably made many phone calls or had that younger fellow that was his I don't know what you'd call it, partner, do these phone calls and maybe pretend you're... pretend you're Johnson, and I'm Hoover's puppet, and I'm saying to you, J. Edgar has heard some growlings from the mafia about Bobby and the deportations and the anger, and we're hearing rumblings of maybe a plot in Chicago or Miami, which were where the first two attempts were to be made. I don't know if you've ever heard anything about those previous attempts.
Yes,
and,
I do.
I just want you to know to let me know if you hear any rumblings at your end of the... And he could have done this with George H.W. Bush, who was head of the CIA at that time. He could have made all these phone calls. And that was why so many people did know ahead of time. But I think in certain ways, people also exonerated themselves. For instance, Johnson. I think many people knew that he knew ahead of time. I don't blame him. I don't think it was his idea. I think he was one of these people who, unbeknownst to him, was being informed ahead of time so he'd know how to play his part.
Well, that's what his long-time... mistress claimed, was it Madeline Duncan Brown? She swore up and down that the night before the assassination, LBJ went to a meeting at Clint Murchison's house where all these oil magnates were, and he came out of that meeting, and he looked her in the eye, and he said, after tonight, that SOB, Jack, will never embarrass me again. Well, is that apocryphal? Hard to say. Is there any substance to that? You know, that's one woman's version of the events. To me, as time goes on, the JFK assassination is becoming increasingly like Roswell. It's a swamp. It's a it's an enigma wrapped in a riddle, dipped in a mystery, with a chocolatey coating candy, chocolatey coating. I don't know that we'll ever now get to the absolute truth. Maybe it's just enough to know that it didn't go down the way we're told, and probably all of the people that were involved are dead and buried. Maybe the names don't matter so much anymore. Maybe it's enough to know about the process, how these things happened, the motive, the how, not so much the who. Almost like a 9/11, we get hung up on, you know, was it thermite? What brought down the buildings? Was it controlled demolition? A friend of mine, an assassination researcher, says it's like counting the blades of grass on the grassy knoll. It's almost inconsequential. Let's go to Mike in Livermore, California, west of the Rockies. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hi, good morning, David. In fact, that was a great intro, your last statement there.
I appreciate it. It's Richard, actually, yeah. Although my brother is David.
Richard,
I often get
my mother calls me David. Your call screener, David.
That's all right. It's a buffet of Davids.
Yeah, and actually, that was actually what the point I wanted to go to. Was so if we figure out if right now the mainstream media came out and said so-and-so killed Kennedy and here's the proof and it went right on in line with everything we know, then what do you think the general public would do? My thought is absolutely nothing.
Well, probably my first inclination is that we would be very skeptical, you know, if that came from the mainstream media. A large portion of the population would say, I don't believe it. Consider the source. Consider this is some sort of psyop they're pulling on us. I don't believe it.
I don't think anybody, I mean, except for a few people, you, myself, a lot of close listeners, your guests and stuff, are actually looking for the truth. I think a lot of this conspiracy stuff is just basically, oh, this is mind candy for me, you know? My iPod is not enough. My iPhone, the internet, whatever. Oh, this is exciting. But I don't really think anything would come of it. I don't think there'd be a great revolt. I think we're so dumbed down now in society that I'm happy. I'm going to go on with what I'm doing.
I agree. It's bread and circuses. We've been anesthetized. We're asleep. We're stumbling towards the abyss with drool on our chin. I don't disagree with you, Mike. Let's... take a time out. We'll come back to more of your calls. Open lines, Topeka, Lake George, Colorado, awaits on open lines here on Coast to Coast. Thanks for hanging out. My name is Richard Serrett.